welcome to a pretty cool episode of the Monday Mile podcast. Today, we are at home. And something that not many of our listeners may know is that I call Belfast home. It's our first podcast we've ever recorded in Belfast. And today, I'm linking up with a lady who has the nickname The Curse. Heard of MMA? She fights in the featherweight division of the Bellator and is currently ranked number one. And yes, that's in the world. She's traveled all over the world for her profession, representing Northern Ireland. And today I am proud to be walking a mile with Leah McCall. Leah, welcome to Monday Mile.
Thank you. What a nice day in Belfast. It's normally like pouring with rain.
I think we've sandwiched this podcast perfectly because yesterday it was raining and tomorrow it's raining.
Oh, you've brought the sun.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to say that. I brought it over from the south of England.
Yeah.
Where are we today?
We are at the Titanic building in Belfast. I think this is quite an iconic area because you've got the SSE Arena and the cranes all in this like circle. It's quite nice, isn't it?
It's very nice. How did it all start? And firstly, what is MMA for people that might be new to the sport?
So I got into martial arts. I was a child. My dad had three daughters and he wanted us to learn how to defend ourselves. He had quite a tough job and he threw us into judo. So from like I was really young, I always had like a background in martial arts. I used to watch the Olympics and I used to love watching all the different aspects of martial arts, with like striking, wrestling, judo, kickboxing. It wasn't just like one aspect of it I liked. I wanted to learn everything. So after I had my daughter Isabella, I started training in an MMA gym, and there wasn't many girls at that time doing MMA. And I seen how like disciplined and dedicated I was, and I would have jumped in and sparred the boys. They kind of threw me into my first ever amateur MMA fight in 2014 at the Ulster Hall. You did Ulster Hall in Belfast.
Yeah.
So it was such an iconic venue.
2014?
Yeah.
Your first fight?
Yeah.
That's crazy because whilst I was still living in Northern Ireland, 2014, I did my first Olympics.
No way.
Put it up to that.
Yeah, that was the year it all kicked off. But like that was before, like everybody knows about it now, but like that was at the start of the explosion of MMA, I think. And it kind of went from there. I was amateur and I went to Birmingham. I won the Amateur International Mixed Martial Arts Federation Championships. I won the Europeans, won the Worlds in Las Vegas. And then I turned professional. Amongst all my fighting and training, I was also competing in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So I'm a black belt in judo and a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which is an aspect of MMA, because I loved competition. I'm obsessed with competing and having a goal and pushing myself. And if you think about like rugby or football, they compete every weekend.
Yeah.
In MMA, it's too, the risk of injury is too high. Your body couldn't physically fight every weekend. So I liked to also compete in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So I've been traveling around the world for years.
So MMA, the risk of injury is higher than Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu?
Fighting is, training not so much, but when you're in a physical fight and you're wearing 4-ounce gloves, it definitely is a higher risk of injury because you've got that aspect of taking headshots, kicks, knees, elbows, getting sliced with elbows. As you can see, the split down my forehead from a fight last year. It's quite easy to get cut in MMA because you can use your elbows. So I could compete in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu a lot more often as well, yeah.
Savage. Now, talk to me a bit about injury, because we're here walking. There's an iconic venue behind us, the SSE Arena. We were meant to link up back in January, but however, the weather wasn't, let's just say, on our side.
Yeah.
And you were due to be headlining your first ever fight at home. Now, that's huge, a global event in Belfast, and unfortunately you got injured. What happened?
So in October last year, I fought on Bellator 300. I beat the number one contender, which was Sarah McMahon. She's like a women's MMA pioneer. She's an Olympic medalist in wrestling. So I had a huge win over her.
An Olympic medalist in wrestling? That's crazy. That's quite different in itself.
A lot of like the Olympic athletes that are in either like judo, wrestling, sometimes boxing, they do like to transition over to MMA, because when they try it, and whenever you start learning it and becoming educated about how skilled you need to be, the different types of training you need to do, it is addictive. You're always a white belt mentality, so to speak. You always need to like go into the gym, because like and turn up on the mats with like a mentality of like you're not the best in the room. And it's quite hard for a lot of people to do that, because obviously people in top levels of jiu-jitsu coming into MMA aren't going to be the best in the room at that, if that makes sense. But
so almost like a permanent student.
Yeah, totally.
Is that a martial arts form of respect?
It's more like the reality of training in MMA and martial arts is always going to be someone better than you in the room. There's always going to be an opponent with a different style that you have to train for. You're never gonna know everything. You're never gonna be the best in everything, but you can always come up with the correct formula to win. It's so important, your environment, like your team, like who you have around you. It's such a highly pressurized game. It's like going into training, you have to be on top of your game. You can't have an off day or you're gonna get injured. And it really, like even in your personal life, the people around you, you have to have solid people and have a secure mindset to be able to perform at your best.
So who are the people in your life right now that allow you to perform at the very best?
I think a lot of people know my friendship circle is like so solid. They have like unconditional love and support for me with no agenda. They don't need anything from me. They just want to see me be my best. That's my real motivation. My best friends and my family, my sisters, my daughter Isabella. My sister now fosters a little girl and she does judo now and she's obsessed with it. She's amazing. She's like such a motivation for me. Because she loves watching me on the TV. Even at the weekend, I was working on the broadcast, doing commentating and presenting, and she was like, they were sending me videos of her at the TV screen. Leah! Auntie Leah's waving at me. She looks at me. So definitely the little girls as well. And my team. I obviously trained Next Generation in Liverpool since moving there three fights ago. I definitely have improved and developed. So like anything in life, I think you're a product of your environment.
It's incredible how important that is. And I think people often look at individual sports and think it's a sole destination. But I throw it back to my career, and you are nothing without the people around you. And obviously a huge part of it is coaches, physios. But the reason why you turn up in the first place isn't because of the coaches and the physios. It's your family and friends and that environment that you create. Talk to me about being a fighter from Belfast. Belfast is steeped in history when it comes to fighting. What makes people from Belfast different?
Not even fighters. Look at the amazing other sports people we have, like George Best, Rory McIlroy. There's like so many unbelievable athletes from here. I think
Amy Fuller, missed that.
Obviously. And female athletes, Amy Fuller, Mary Peters. Like everybody talks about the guys, but there is great female athletes here. But to be like the first female athlete, like on the world stage, bringing big shows here, like doing what I'm doing. I've always looked up the likes of, you know, Carr Frampton, all the boxers here. He's had big fight nights here. I love the, like, the buzz of fight night. I love the showbiz of it. When I was younger, I used to watch the boxing in the King's Hall with my granddad. I used to bring him to the Odyssey and like to be kind of fall on that. It's like a dream come true when I think about it. It's like, obviously I had my daughter quite young and I had no real, like nothing. I didn't know what was going to happen. And now to see, you know, I've been able to travel around the world with her. She's come to Thailand, LA. She comes to all the fight nights. She travels and has an amazing life. I never actually stopped to think about it, but now I am on this walk. It's like, wow, what a journey it's been so far.
Is Isabella a big part of your motivation to keep striving for success?
Yeah, and I think especially at the start, you know, I was working full time. I had Isabella, you know, young, and I was training full time as well. So that real drive to be the best or to be better or to strive for greatness for her was a huge motivation. And I think people always say to me, like, Leah, you could have been successful in anything you do. Like, why have you chose fighting? But it is a genuine passion. I love it. I'm obsessed with competition, with winning, with training, with being the best version of myself, but also trying to bring up the people around me and make sure, because fighting, you can become quite self-centered. Like, the world doesn't revolve around me. I like to bring people along for the experiences, for the big shows, and they all love it as well.
Is there a particular moment where you've been fighting and Isabella's been there?
The most iconic moment for me was, I've been through quite a lot, like in my personal life, in my life, and I've never really dwell on it, but it was this moment I got the chance to headline the 3 Arena in Dublin. I was only like 3 fights in as a professional. It was the main event, and a lot of, my nickname was a curse. I'll write 6 books about that later, but anything that can go wrong in my life goes wrong. And it was like a fairy tale moment. I had just won and Isabella comes running in the cage and hugs me, and there's like an iconic photo of her hugging me, and I just think, wow, like what we've came through to get there is just insane.
Do you think you'll instill the values that you've learned through fighting into her, and would you like her to fight?
So Isabella is so different to me. She's so patient, and like I'm on the go a million miles an hour, mind racing. She's so relaxed. She's so kind. She's so patient. Like, she's such a lovely presence. She's so great with people. With at any age, she looks after my sister's little foster children. She's like the most genuine heart, and she's so dedicated to her work at school. And I've never been a pushy parent, and I don't care. As long as she's okay mentally or she's in a great form, I don't care about anything. She would get up like 5 o'clock to study for exams. Like, just, that is not like me.
Or me either. I can definitely join you on that one. When it comes to being a mum and juggling, how old were you when you gave birth to
18.
Isabella? That is incredibly young. You've then gone on to undertaking a new skill and become a professional at the top level. For any parent that perhaps has had a child young, what would you say to them about still following their dreams and juggling being a parent? Because that's no easy undertaking.
Yeah. When I look back at here in Belfast, there wasn't a lot of places for me to train to be the best version of myself. There was days I was getting up, leaving Isabella school, driving 2 hours to Dublin. I did that for like 5 years, training to get the best training.
Driving to Dublin?
Yeah. Getting up, leaving her to school, doing a run, driving to Dublin, driving back, picking her up from school.
Sorry, you say it so casually. We just need to unpack that a little bit, because that in itself is not an average day. You're getting up early, you're dropping her off, you're doing a run, and then you're driving.
Yeah.
Why the run before the drive before the training? There's a lot going on there.
So I was doing faster cardio because obviously it's a weight-making sport. I have to make a certain weight. So I was having to do my run, drive 2 hours to Dublin. The worst thing about it was like the time out of my day. So it was taking like 4 hours out of my day just traveling to training. So that was about 5 years of my life I did that. And then...
That's savage, Leah. Yeah.
So recently I've been doing my camps in Liverpool. So I train Monday to Friday, fly over on a Sunday night, back on a Friday, have like a week of like 15 training sessions. Like, this is like the stuff that people don't see. Like, they see all the stuff on social media, and I probably don't put enough of my actual training and life up because it is pretty crazy, but I haven't got time to.
Yeah, because there's a lot of glitz and glam when performing on the world stage. You say that, there's also a lot of black eyes and
split faces
that happen as well. But what would you say to anyone that wants to chase their dreams and they are a parent and juggling it? How have you done it? What is it that made you push through that?
I've had so many obstacles at the start. Like, I remember waking up and sometimes I didn't know if I was going to have money to put in my car to get to training that week. And I just had this inner drive and inner belief. And I have to always live by that: you find a way or make a way if you want something to happen. And no matter what obstacle you come up against, if you persevere, no matter how long it takes, you can achieve it. And I think it's especially for mums or, you know, single mums. I think it's a big thing. They think that they can't do certain things, where I have like, other people's opinions have never been my ceiling. I don't listen to anybody. I genuinely don't care if anybody talks about me online. Don't really get a lot of that, but I'm very much my own person and have my own like drive to be the best version of myself.
So when you started MMA, did you have this vision that you could be the best in the world?
No. You know, I think on the other hand, I've suffered a lot from not having a lot of confidence in myself, not believing in myself, doubting myself, having that like monkey mind of like, you're not good enough. You're like, what are you doing here? Like, imposter syndrome. That's very much there. And you very much have to battle that constantly. I'm sure you've dealt with that as well as an athlete, because there's always going to be doubts. But
I'd say I was the opposite, actually.
Oh, really?
I was probably overconfident and still am now. I'll embrace it.
I love that. And I think that that's such a part of success, when you actually can have that little bit of like delusion that, oh my God, yeah, I am the best.
I deserve to be there.
I wish I had that. It's like,
here, let me give you some. There you go.
Yeah, thank you. But it's a big thing I still battle with, but it's getting better. I think, you know, obviously I'm literally the number one contender in the world at the minute, so I can't. I have to believe in myself, but...
100%. Now, just over there is the SSC arena.
Yeah.
You were due to headline there. Unfortunately, you had to miss out. Talk to me about the rib injuries you sustained in general, because it's gnarly.
Our injuries actually happen at training. I've had hand surgery, I've had knee surgery, shoulder surgery, and that's really through a lot of wear and tear, like training so hard, training against bigger guys. Like, I don't really have a lot of female training partners, so I'm getting hurt. But it hasn't really been anything that bad. But obviously, I beat Sarah. I was meant to be fighting for the title. Bellator got acquired by PFL. They have different plans for when they want that date to be. But I was meant to be fighting in the SSC arena. My best friend Ryan got horrifically injured. I was pulled away from training camp in January. Then I flew to Vegas. Molly, my best friend Molly McCann, had a huge win. was got given a fight date and an opponent.
Little celebration out there, obviously in Vegas with Miles.
Oh, well, we drove to LA and it literally was torrential rain. This is my nickname, The Curse. The worst rain in like 100 years in LA. We were there. But we had a laugh, yeah.
Basically, don't go on holiday anywhere sunny.
Ever with me. Ever. Because,
hey, look, there is zero curse today.
Yeah.
It's glorious.
It is. But and then even in San Diego, or last year I thought in LA, and they were like, there's a freak tornado coming to LA, and my coaches were like, obviously there is because you're here. Anyway, yeah, so went to LA, came back, was given a fight date, was given 7 weeks to prepare for my fight. It was a short camp, first week back, slipped in sparring. My partner landed with their knee on my ribs.
Oh.
Horrific. Total break in my rib, tore my oblique, couldn't sleep, couldn't breathe, couldn't eat, like horrendous.
Lena, that is horrific. The oblique as well, to rip a muscle in your stomach.
Because the way she landed, it was like I was getting up, but they fell on my rib. It was like the worst pain that obviously ruined me out of the fight. Like, just devastating. But I have to just keep believing there's bigger things happening this year. I'm going to make this year count. We're going to aim to fight in September and then in December. And
my question is, what hurts more, the injury or missing out?
Definitely missing out. Like, I was working the broadcast at the weekend. I was doing commentating and presenting and just being like right there watching everybody fighting. I was like, oh man. But you know what? I have to put it into perspective and not feel too sorry for myself. My friends got badly injured and I'll be back in like a few months. And I think God was like telling me to slow down and like take a bit of time. And this is time to get better. And you can't just be go, go, go all the time.
Do you get scared of getting hurt?
Never thought about it. I've never thought of an injury or when I'm fighting. The only thing I'm scared of is losing. And it's so all consuming. I just like have such like a will to win. And it just consumes me. I just like to get that win, to be the best, to get a big performance. I think that's what drives me to train so hard and dedicate so much to training.
How do you manage loss?
Obviously, like, it's so heartbreaking. It's devastating. But I really don't try and dwell on it too much, because to be a great champion in this sport, you have to be a good loser and deal with it, take it on the chin, get back in the gym, make that drive to make you so much better. Because if you feel sorry for yourself, get too much in your head, there's no point. Do you know what I mean? You've got huge goals to achieve. And it is MMA. It's not like boxing where if you suffer a loss, everybody writes you off, which I totally disagree with. You know, MMA, there's a lot more ways to win. There's a lot more ways to lose. And people really respect, I think, MMA athletes. So we can move on quite quickly.
Now, take me to Liverpool. You're juggling quite a bit there. Part of the week here, part of the week there.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I'm intrigued with, and I know a lot of people are, is the weight management lifestyle you have to obtain. So you do your fight, you're at your weight. What happens in between? Because I'm seeing a lot of MMA athletes. I'm going to throw some names out there. Paddy the Baddy. This guy, he explodes. He goes from this skinny little run to a rather large human. Now, that can't be healthy.
No. Do you know what I think it is with Paddy, though? It's his face. I think whenever he starts eating the salt and the glucose, the carbs, his face just like goes, whoa. His body doesn't match his face, if that makes sense. But as females, it's very hard to maintain that certain weight, and it messes with your hormones. It messes with a lot of your insides. Whenever you're cutting so much weight, your body's at such high stress. You have to try and maintain a light weight all year round. Sometimes your body physically can't control it. You do blow up, or you have a reaction to start eating bread or carbs again. But we have to be so strict in camp, because you know, if you have a hard weight cut, that's going to affect your performance the next night. So we weigh in 24 hours before our fight, and then you have to rehydrate and eat and carb load and get all your nutrients back into you before fight night. If you've got a bad weight cut, that could really affect your performance, can affect your dehydration levels, your brain function, everything. I've had some bad weight cuts. I have nearly seen death. And that is a testament to your mental resilience. I think probably one of the hardest parts of the whole thing is that weight cut the night before fight night.
You say that sort of quite lightheartedly and in jest. Death, there's nothing normal about that. Like, that's not the day to day. Starvation of the extreme is what you're talking about. So 65 kilos is what you fight at.
Yeah.
Talk to me about the fluctuations throughout the year and the most extreme cut you've ever had to do.
I think the toughest weight cut I've done is during lockdown, whenever we weren't allowed to train at the gyms. There was no gyms open. I had to travel to New York and New York was shut down. I was fighting in Connecticut. I had a massive fight. The saunas weren't open. The gyms weren't open. All I had was a bath, and it was like I had to cut quite a lot of weight in the bath. Camp didn't go well. I just had shoulder surgery. I had an injection in my collarbone. Like, it was the most horrendous camp. Don't even know why I even thought I could do it. Had a horrendous weight cut. I was up for 24 hours. I was in the bath. So basically what we do is we have boiling hot baths. You're dehydrated for 24 hours. You've had no water.
Dehydrated, so you're drinking nothing.
Yeah. And you're trying to pull the water out of you. So you're in the bath, saunas, sweatsuits, like... It is like a form of self-torture, and nobody understands it until they've been there. It is the most horrific, like when you have a bad weight cut, it is the worst. There's nothing that can compare to how horrific you feel, and knowing mentally that you have to keep going, or you're not going to fight the next night. But that was the worst one I had in Connecticut. I was walking down to the casino the next night to fight. I was so lightheaded, I couldn't see. I got in the cage and was like, what am I doing here? I was horrendous, Sweden. And I ended up getting like a viral knockout that has been like the most viewed finish ever in Bellator history, 55 million views. And
a viral knockout, as in you knocked them out?
Yeah.
Even after that weight cut?
And my coaches were like, you're not going in, you're going to get hurt, this is so dangerous, what are you doing? Let's do the test of all the trials, and I ended up getting like probably the most viral finish I'll ever get. And that's definitely just my mentality, just keep going, doesn't matter what's happening, you can do it. But that was really horrendous. Ever since then, I've been able to manage my weight a lot better. Like, I've worked with weight nutritionists.
Was that almost like sort of an eye-opener, like, don't put myself in this situation again?
It is that, and a lot to managing the female body when it comes to obviously everything we've got going on. At certain times of the month, we retain a lot more water. It's a lot harder for us to cut weight. MMA is a bit behind. They don't really care or understand that.
Do you think that should change?
Yes and no, because at the end of the day, all the women are the same. They all have to deal with it, unless it was like a blanket. I don't know how they would manage it. I haven't got the answers, but yeah, it's a big part.
It can't be healthy though, fighting at particular weights. It goes for all fighting sports. But if you're trying to sit 7 to 10 kilos under what you should organically sit at, surely these highs and lows and fluctuations in weight cuts aren't good for the body.
Yeah, totally. And the thing about it is, in boxing, there's a lot more weight divisions. In MMA, there's 10 pounds between every weight division. So in boxing, there could be 2 or 3 pounds. So if I don't make 135, I'm jumping up to fight 145, a lot bigger people. I am at the heaviest weight class at 145, so like that's small. Like I'm tall, I'm quite lean for my shape and size anyway, and that's the heaviest. The one below me, I'd be fighting at 61 kilo, which would be, like, I would be anorexic at that, like horrendous. I've made that once, that was a tough cut as well. But I don't like the way there's so many pounds and kilos in between weight divisions, so you literally can't make that one, you're jumping up, so you have to make the lighter one, if that makes sense.
Got you. Because otherwise you'd have to really pile on the pounds, and then would you be too heavy to almost fight?
It just wouldn't be your natural weight. You would be fighting people a lot, they say, taller, stronger, more explosive than you. So yeah, the guys have a lot more weight classes, and there's only really 3 main ones in women's MMA: 115, 125, 135, 145. And the guys go right up to like 205. Like, they've got the big heavyweights.
What would be your sort of traditional diet through a training camp? How many calories roughly you eat per day, and is there certain types of food that you have to avoid when you're going through that cutting process?
So I work with a great nutritionist. He's actually Paddy's nutritionist as well, so he does the magic. He gets
but he has a hard time with him.
Yeah, I do normally about 1800 2000 calories a day, and then it comes down to like 1600 closer to the fight, and that's like you're still training 2-3 times a day. You do like 160 grams protein. If you think about it, MMA hasn't got like it's not like other sports where they have a lot of grass where it helps. We never knew how to do diets back in the day. We would have just not ate carbs at all and like trained like crazy for the first half of my career, and that really messed up your body, because then when you have carbs you react really badly to it. So yeah, it's a big thing, obviously, keeping carbs in there to recover and to for energy. But it's pretty low calories for the amount of output we do. I try and keep around in between camps a lighter weight, so we don't have to just think about weight cuts all the time.
Yeah. So I can imagine mentally that's not great for the brain either.
No, because then it's like you can't sleep. All you're thinking about is your weight, and then the stress. You have to, it makes you retain more water. It's like a vicious cycle.
Post-competition, what's the go-to cheat meal?
Do you know, I don't eat a lot of takeaways. I don't really like them.
That's a really good place to be. because
yeah, I
feel like that's the worst, really.
I love Nando's. Ooh, is yeah. my favourite.
I do like a cheeky Nando's. Like
if
well.
I could eat any food, it'd probably be Nando's.
Just every day.
Yeah, and even after we cut, we do Nando's.
What we're loading up on in Nando's then, if we're going in?
They used to do sweet potato mash, remember?
Oh, yeah.
They don't do it anymore.
That's pretty devastating.
I normally just do a wrap. I'm so boring. I just do a wrap.
Little wrap. I'd go spicy chicken.
Do you? No, I can't do spice.
I love spice. I'm smashing all the spice at the minute. I've just got back from India. So
oh, that is,
I've even bought my spices to Northern Ireland. To put on the barbecue
no
later.
Way. Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, a big part of what you do is self-defense. Do you think it's important for women today to have an element of self-defense training?
Yeah, I think what you said is important. An element, I think, like, you're never going to be totally safe from everything. Like, you could have just beat me up.
Imagine, I'd be flat within 2 seconds.
You'd be in the water. No, I think like you're never going to be fully safe from any situation, but having an element of self-defense or knowing some kind of self-defense is really why I got into martial arts, why my dad put me into it. I feel like it's important to feel like I used to teach women self-defense classes in Belfast, and you wouldn't believe, like this is about 6 years ago, the different types of women that came to MMA and loved MMA. Like they went to all the UFC fights. They were like doctors, nurses, lawyers, people you would, women you would never imagine who just love MMA because it is so exciting. It is the most exciting sport in the world. Everybody knows it. That's why they respect the athletes so much. And women want to learn it when they understand the grappling aspect of it, the wrestling. You see now, like, everybody does Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. It's just
every guy in
the world does BJJ. That's really taken off.
If there was an element of self-defense that you were to introduce to people to have as sort of a standard part of their day-to-day repertoire, what do you think would be the most valuable part of it?
I think Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I think the fact that it incorporates takedowns and like ethos of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is getting out of a bad position and getting into a good position. So if you think about a street fight, somebody isn't just going to come and punch you. You see, they're going to grab you. They might take you to the floor. You know, they might have you up against the wall. And this is all Jiu-Jitsu. This is what I do in the cage. It's like I'm working off the cage. I'm working off my back. I'm trying to submit people off my back. I'm trying to get back up. I'm trying to like get in a better position. I think for women especially, it's such an unbelievable martial art.
The takedown and then the run, the sprint home, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm going like this, yeah? Bang,
yeah.
Bang.
Yeah.
Is that it?
You nearly got it, well done.
There you go. All of that boxing I've been doing with my legs.
You would be good. I bet you should take up jiu-jitsu, you'd love it. But the other thing is, I think that my dad always said the best form of self-defense is not having to be in any competition. Like I've never had a fight, I've never had a competition. Being able to have confidence and hold yourself, knowing that you don't need to ever be in that kind of situation.
Yeah, that's so true. Just have it, knowing you've got the ability there, but not needing to use it.
Yeah.
Avoiding those situations at all costs.
Yeah.
Now, Leah, we like to ask all of our guests on the Monday Mile podcast what their relationship is with Monday. Do you like a Monday?
Yeah, I love Monday. Do you know what? I write my schedule for the week on a Sunday, my goals for the week. And I love waking up Monday. I love when it's training week and it's your first day back training. You've had a day off. You're not crying in pain going to the gym.
Yeah. Do you normally fly to Liverpool on a Monday?
I normally fly on a Sunday night. Right. So because I'd be too tired to hit training after a flight. So I fly a Sunday night, get up, coffee, Monster. First session of the week. Love it, yeah.
Straight in. And lastly, Leah, do you have any life mottos or quotes that you can share with our listeners to inspire them to get up and chase their dreams in the way that you have?
Yeah, I think we've only so much time here. Like every day counts. Win the day, win every single day. Don't give up if you wake up and have a bad day. Think there's something you can achieve. There's something I can do. I can better myself in some way every single day. At the start of camp and I look at my opponent, I'm like, how am I going to get step into the cage with that person? I'm like, you do it by every single day, like every single session, every single meal, and it all adds up. And when you're in that locker room before you walk out for a fight, you've known you've done everything to be there.
In that moment you're stepping out into the ring, what are you thinking?
So I have a lot of nerves. When I get to the warm-up room, I just go cold. I'm just in like this, I just have this different presence, and I don't know, it's like a really weird pace, and I'm warming up. I'm feeling more confident as if it comes closer and closer to fight night, and you hear the other fighters get called, you hear the other names get called to fight, and you see them coming back in the warm-up room, and they're either injured or they're either on the top of the world, they've won, and I'm just like taking it in. So it's like intense. You've got all the commotion backstage, and I'm just like ice queen, like I know it's ready to time to go. It's just, it's really hard to communicate the pressure feeling moment, knowing you're going to be locked in a cage to fight someone and you could come out on top of the world or in like the lowest of lows. It's a lot, yeah. Crazy.
I actually can't imagine that because I've only ever had a little go at boxing. I've never punched anyone. I've never physically, in that sense, I can't actually imagine it. I feel like I'm such a softie, but imagine when that cage is locked,
yeah,
and they're coming at you. The only way is to...
Yeah, you have to go. You have to be switched on. It's intense.
And mentally, it must charge you up so much. Like, I bet you can't sleep after a fight.
No, you can't sleep for days after. And is that real? Everybody talks about that real come down because you're so adrenaline fueled. You're so stimulated. Like, coming down after a fight camp and a fight night, it's intense, yeah.
Liam McCourt, it doesn't get any more iconic than this. We've got Harlan and Wolf to our right. We've got the Titanic Museum behind us. In fact, do you know what these are?
No, what are they?
This is where the lifeboats on the Titanic were situated. God. And this here is the line in which the Titanic sat when it was built.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Thank you so much for joining
Thanks for having me
here at home on the Monday Mile Walk and Talk podcast. To our listeners, if you are new to the podcast, welcome. The audio drops at 12 a.m. every single Monday morning for the early risers. And if you're new to the YouTube, welcome. Please do make sure you give us a follow, subscribe, and do all of that YouTube jazz. And we will be back next week. Liam McCourt, it's a wrap.
Thank you.